Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. Today we have news about a local school that's shutting down due to concerns over toxic contamination. On our Capitol Report, we'll have details on a filibuster that led to the Patriot Act expiring, bringing an end to the mass collection of phone records, and why critics on both the left and right are raising concerns over national security. We'll have the latest bizarre details in an alleged road rage murder that claimed the life of a military officer from Santee. On Green Scene, hear about the Ocotillo Wind Energy Facility's lackluster wind output, adding fuel to critics who contend that the developer defrauded the government to pocket lucrative subsidies. Learn about a no-burn proclamation issued by CAL FIRE due to the drought, and hear about some vehicle burglary suspects in Ramona and Poway that the sheriff wants the public's help to find. Today we have two newsmaker interviews. Our first is with Masada Dissenhouse, co-founder of San Diego 350. She'll be talking about the impacts that the Trans-Pacific Partnership trade deal could have on climate change, and about a secretive clause that would let corporations sue government entities that are seeking to protect residents. Then we'll be speaking with Karen Toledo from the International Student Exchange about opportunities for local families to host a foreign exchange student, as well as a job opportunity and information for local students interested in becoming an exchange student overseas. We'll also have news today about El Cajon's decision to outsource the city's janitorial jobs. And then on Destination East County, hear about all the top festivals and events this week, from night fishing to a craft beer and wine festival and the Taste of La Mesa, plus a preview of some coming attractions. Learn about efforts to help raise money for Alpine's new library that's under construction. Hear about a summer reading challenge at all county libraries that's really for the birds. We'll also tell you about an event this weekend featuring our very own Ask an Author columnist on East County Magazine. On Tribal Beat, hear why the Pope's proposal to canonize Father Junipero Serra as a saint is opposed by many Native Americans. And finally, Connie Beck will be giving you some tips about mulch to help save water and help your garden grow. We'll have all these stories and more, so stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. This is Miriam Raftery with an update on a story we aired last week when we reported that parents in El Cajon have filed a lawsuit against Amatec Aerospace and Defense, alleging that the company's underground toxic waste dumping is causing illness among children at Magnolia Elementary School next door. Now, the Cajon Valley School District Board has voted unanimously to close down the school for the current school year. All students and staff will be relocated to Bostonia Elementary School, also in El Cajon. 10 News reports that the superintendent says the board is looking at ways to keep kids safe, going above and beyond recommendations from the state. The dumping went on for 20 years, ending in the 1980s, but the site remains contaminated and the company has been fined for its failure to clean up the wastes. An attorney for the plaintiffs has said that the 7,000 gallons of chlorinated solvent waste dumped by Amatec has created an underground plume over a mile long, extending to Gillespie Field, the largest such plume of trichloroethylene, or TCE, in California. According to the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, exposure to TCE has been reported to have adverse effects on the central nervous system, the immune system, and the endocrine or hormonal system. It can cause headaches, fatigue, confusion, sleeplessness, and blurred vision. It can also affect the liver and kidneys, gastrointestinal tract, and the skin. The Environmental Protection Agency further states that TCE exposure is associated with cancer of the kidney and other organs. Some studies have found an association between exposure to TCE during pregnancy and increased risk of heart defects, other birth defects, and low birth weight in children, though other studies found no such link. Parents want the company to foot the bill for monitoring the health of children who were exposed to the underground hazard. This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital.
The Patriot Act expired at midnight Sunday after a filibuster by Senator Rand Paul prevented the Senate from passing a proposed reform measure, the USA Freedom Act. Critics contend that allowing the Patriot Act to sunset without passing an alternative puts national security at risk, though some civil libertarians applaud the action to halt mass collection of data by the National Security Administration. President Barack Obama asked Congress a year and a half ago to come up with a measure to replace the controversial Patriot Act. The resulting legislation, the USA Freedom Act, had passed the House of Representatives with 338 votes and had strong bipartisan support. If enacted, that measure would have prohibited the mass collection of Americans' phone and email records while allowing some other provisions of the Patriot Act to be removed. During his filibuster, Senator Paul stated, "There comes a time in the history of nations when fear and complacency allow power to accumulate and liberty and privacy to suffer. That time is now, and I will not let the Patriot Act, the most unpatriotic of acts, go unchallenged." He noted that the NSA's mass data collection was ruled illegal by a judge in the ACLU versus Clapper case. Paul's success at forcing the Patriot Act to expire with no replacement legislation in place has drawn criticism from both the left and the right. The White House press secretary issued a statement called the Senate action an irresponsible lapse, adding, "On a matter as critical as our national security, individual senators must put aside their partisan motivations and act swiftly." House Republican leaders also voiced concern over the lapse in the NSA's spying powers. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell has proposed yet another alternative measure that would allow mass data collection, but have phone companies store the data, not the government. McConnell's proposal has drawn fire from privacy advocates, and now the four leaders of the House Judiciary Committee, two Democrats and two Republicans, have written a letter stating the House is not likely to accept the changes proposed by Senator McConnell. House Majority Leader Kevin McCarthy, on the other hand, wants to see the Senate approve the House bill, not McConnell's alternative. So for now, pending action by a Congress split, not merely down party lines, but the NSA's spying powers remain shut down. This has been Leon Thompson reporting for East County Magazine.
This is Ed Barreno with the Crime Beat Report. Santee resident Zachariah Boab, age 39, a Navy Chief Petty Officer in Special Operations, was killed on May 28th in a bizarre road rage incident. Darla Jackson, 26, has been charged with murder for allegedly striking Boab intentionally with her vehicle and running over him on his motorcycle. The two drivers had reportedly had a dispute on the road earlier when Jackson was driving her black Nissan Altima northbound on I-5 near E Street in Chula Vista. According to the San Diego police, Jackson followed Boab as he transitioned onto State Route 54, passing the National City Boulevard exit, where she ran him over. He was transported to a hospital where he died. Now an NBC7 News investigation has found that two ex-partners of Jackson's reported that she made violent threats against them. According to a domestic violence report and restraining order filed against Jackson by an ex-boyfriend, she has a history of abuse, including allegedly trying to run over her ex with a car after they got into an argument in 2012. He stated that he pushed himself off her hood and jumped over a fence to escape as she advanced toward him in her vehicle. He also claimed she called and texted him hundreds of times with threats that included trying to get him fired, hurting herself, and telling police he had harmed her. A second ex-boyfriend also filed a temporary restraining order against Jackson, claiming she left messages threatening to hurt him or damage his property. In addition, she allegedly etched profanity into a car owned by her ex-boyfriend's father and tried to break into the property. Jackson has pled not guilty.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community. This is Miriam Raftery with a Green Scene Report, or perhaps in this case, a not-so-green report. Last year, our award-winning investigative story titled, Was It Fraud?, raised serious questions over why Pattern Energy's Ocotillo Wind Energy Facility produced only 15% capacity factor in 2013. That's far less than the 34% capacity factor that Pattern promised the federal government in order to obtain lucrative federal subsidies. Even after accounting for time when a fallen blade shut down the project, capacity factor for the remaining months still averaged less than 19%. Now, the figures are in for 2014, and guess what? The Ocotillo Wind Project again underperformed, this time reaching 24% capacity factor. Only 2 months, May and June, exceeded the 34% that Pattern had predicted. The rest fell short, in some cases by huge margins. 2 months produced less than 7% capacity factor, for example. International energy expert Nicholas Picard had predicted before the project was built that the site did not have enough wind energy to sustain a wind project. After the first year figures proved his prediction was accurate, Picard told us that the federal government appeared to have enough evidence to pursue a false claims action against Pattern. But the government ignored the evidence and did nothing. Maps submitted by Pattern to win approval made it appear that the project would be located at an elevation 3,000 feet higher than the actual site, as documents that we published last year proved. We brought these issues to the attention of Congressman Juan Vargas, who represents the community of Ocotillo as well as East County. We sent numerous documents and expert statements. In March of 2014, we got a response from Congressman Vargas's staffer, Diana Zamora, in his Washington, D.C. office. Back then, she assured us that the congressman takes any accusations of impropriety or fraud very seriously. He has reached out to the Department of Energy to share with them the information you have provided. She also said that Congressman Vargas had asked the best method for evaluating the information to determine if any wrongdoing has occurred, and she promised to get back to us just as soon as she heard back about the Department of Energy's evaluation. But more than a year later, she has not done so. Meanwhile, Pattern continues to receive subsidies for each megawatt of power that it does produce, with zero accountability for building a wind project on a site that the federal government's own wind resource map showed was substandard for an industrial-scale wind energy facility. Nor is this the only indication of misleading claims made by Pattern. We have previously documented dubious claims made about earthquake safety, avian radar, health, worker safety, jobs, wildlife issues, and more at a project that has also been linked to Dust Bowl-scale dust storms and pollution of Ocotillo waterways, as well as residential areas contaminated with a flammable dust suppression chemical, as well as endangering public safety when an 11-ton blade fell off on an off-roader's trail, as our many award-winning reports on this topic has documented. Pattern Energy also drew criticism from many Native American tribes and the California Native American Heritage Commission for desecrating sacred sites and burial grounds. The project also destroyed groves of century-old Ocotillo plants for which the town itself was named. It left residents plagued by noise, infrasound, and flashing red lights from turbines shining in their windows all night long, as well as lost views on protected public land surrounding the town and plummeting property values. With so many negative impacts, the consequences for residents, the environment, and taxpayers are high. So the question remains, why hasn't our government taken action to hold the developer responsible for pocketing your money to build a wind project without adequate wind?
As drought conditions continue to increase fire danger in the region, CAL FIRE has suspended all burn permits for outdoor open residential burning in the state responsibility area of San Diego and Imperial counties. This suspension takes effect immediately and bans all residential outdoor burning of landscape debris, including branches and leaves. CAL FIRE San Diego Unit Chief and County Fire Chief Tony Meacham says San Diego lives with the threat of wildfire year-round, and it's critical that the public do their part to be extra fire safe when outdoors. CAL FIRE Director and Chief Ken Pimlott adds, "With record-setting drought conditions, we must take every step possible to prevent new wildfires from starting. One less spark means one less wildfire." Similar to last year, CAL FIRE has already responded to significantly more wildfires than in an average year. CAL FIRE is asking residents to ensure that they are prepared for wildfires, including maintaining a minimum of 100 feet of defensible space around every home. Here are some tips to help prepare your home and property. Clear all dead or dying vegetation 100 feet around all structures. Landscape with fire-resistant, drought-tolerant plants. Find alternative ways to dispose of landscape debris like chipping or hauling it to biomass energy facilities. The department may issue restricted temporary burning permits if there is an essential reason due to public health or safety. Agriculture, land management, fire training, and other industrial-type burning may proceed if a CAL FIRE official inspects the burn site and issues a special permit. Campfires within organized campgrounds or on private property that are otherwise permitted will be allowed if the campfire is maintained in such a manner as to prevent its spread to the wild lands. For additional information on preparing for and preventing wildfires, visit readyforwildfire.org. This has been Leon Thompson on East County Magazine.
San Diego County Crime Stoppers and investigators from the Ramona and Poway Sheriff Stations want your help to identify and find two suspects wanted in a series of vehicle burglaries. The crime spree started in Poway, where there have been 7 burglaries since May 10th targeting landscapers' vehicles at apartment complexes. The thieves stole leaf blowers, trimmers, and other equipment. A similar crime occurred in Ramona on May 25th, and the suspect's descriptions there matched those in a May 18th Poway crime observed by a witness. The suspects drove a 2001 silver or gray Honda two-door sedan with California license plate 4N0G855. The vehicle was recently sold, and there is no updated owner information available, according to authorities. Detectives are asking anybody who witnessed any of the incidents to call the Poway Sheriff Station at 858-513-2800. If you have information on the identity or the location of the suspects, you can also call Crime Stoppers Anonymous tip line at 888-580-8477. Crime Stoppers is offering up to a $1,000 reward to anybody with information that leads to an arrest in this case. Anonymous email and text messages can also be sent via sdcrimestoppers.org. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM, Descanso, recording in our studio in the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. Today, my very special guest is Masada Diffenhaus, who is the co-founder of San Diego 350, an organization dedicated to raising awareness about climate change. And she's here to talk to us about the Trans-Pacific Partnership Free Trade Agreement that's currently working its way through Congress. Masada, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Miriam.
Tell us what some of the major concerns are that you have. I understand that currently there's an effort to fast-track this through Congress. What exactly does that mean?
Basically, fast-tracking would enable the White House to do all the negotiations on this trade agreement. It's a multinational trade agreement with 12 countries so far interested. And the Congress would basically be cut out of the negotiations and only have the ability for an up or down vote at the end of the process instead of being integrally involved in it.
Now, the Senate already approved fast-tracking, mm-hmm. So the next step is it goes to the House to approve or deny that. One of the problems, I understand, is that this whole thing has been negotiated in secrecy, correct?
Correct. I mean, they've been negotiating this agreement for many years now, over 6 and possibly more. They actually met here in San Diego a number of years ago where the delegates met downtown, and we went and spoke to some of them about this trade agreement. And the public really has very little access to the agreement. We only have access to certain segments that have been leaked either by members of Congress or other negotiators who are party to this. And even members of Congress themselves do not have the ability to get a copy of the agreement. They have to go into a secret, windowless, secure room in Congress where they're not even allowed to take notes, bring their cell phone, or bring an assistant.
Absolutely amazing. So they can't get any analysis of it or look something up later. That's
exactly.
just astounding. Very, very troubling, I think. Now, what are the implications of this from a climate change standpoint? Why is 350 concerned?
That's a great question. Basically, this is a deal that's being driven by corporations. 85%, according to the Boston Globe, of the negotiators are lobby industry executives or representatives.
Corporate lobbyists are negotiating the deal.
Exactly. And so we know that when companies like Exxon and Shell are driving the negotiations on this, that it's not going to end up being something that is good for either moving climate change solutions forward or health or safety code either. So that's the basics of it. But there are some specifics in there that would be really detrimental to moving solutions to climate change forward. And those are specifically, there's a section that talks about removing review requirements for exporting natural gas from the U.S., which would basically increase fracking, increase production of natural gas in the U.S. at a time when we're trying to cut down on fossil fuels. And the other one is the ISDS, the Interstate Dispute Settlement section, which allows companies to sue other governments if they try to produce regulations or requirements that the company feels are going to cut into their future profits. And that could be anything from a country or a state saying that they want to incentivize renewable energy to requiring a reduction in emissions, things like that.
So if, say, California, right now they have a ban, for example, on offshore oil drilling off San Diego's coast. So, for instance, if some corporation wanted to sue, that's the kind of thing that could be in trouble, right?
Yeah, if they felt like it's cutting into their future profits and that they're not getting equal access, basically, it's something that they could sue over. And it goes to a tribunal that is not in the country that's being addressed.
And it could be county also, right? A county or a city, basically anybody.
Yeah, my understanding is that it could be any level of government and that, again, it goes to this tribunal that's not a court within the country, but a tribunal that is largely favorable to corporate interests.
Wouldn't that have a chilling effect on particularly smaller governments, cities, towns, counties, passing legislation that's intended to protect the public good from sort of predatory corporate practices, say restrictions on pollution, for example?
Yeah, exactly. I read about a case recently where Quebec was trying to decide whether it wanted to ban fracking and was threatened with a lawsuit through a trade agreement on that and backed off it. So,
wow. Yeah, really, really frightening. It sort of begs the question of why in the world would members of Congress even be thinking about voting for something like that? And where do the members of our San Diego congressional delegation stand on this?
I think that's a great question. And I mean, I think it's one that Senator Elizabeth Warren has been posing to the president for a while.
Yeah, the president's been trying to push this through, President Obama.
Right. And our understanding is that the White House is really twisting congressional arms on this. And, you know, they keep saying it's about jobs, but, you know, every trade agreement history shows that, for us at least, it results in outsourcing. These trade agreements result in outsourcing. And
yeah, we certainly saw that with NAFTA, mm-hmm. where a lot of the jobs went south to Mexico, for example.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, I'm not privy to why they're doing this, but, you know, corporate interests play a big role in campaign finance, yeah. and I can't imagine it's unconnected. So our five congressional representatives, right now, Congressman Juan Vargas and Congressman Duncan Hunter are opposed to
fast tracking. It's interesting. They rarely agree on anything. They're opposite parties. One's a liberal Democrat and the other's a conservative Republican, but they both are against this. And I understand that Vargas's concern is largely jobs and wages. I'm not sure what Hunter's reason is, but his father, actually, Duncan Hunter Sr., long opposed NAFTA and CAFTA because he was concerned about American sovereignty and he didn't want to see things like, you know, the aerospace industry being outsourced somewhere, or airplanes, warplanes being made overseas or something. Mm-hmm. So that people can come to oppose this for very different reasons.
Yeah, it's one of the really interesting things about this bill is that it's not a party vote. It's split on the Republican side and it's split on the Democratic side. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the reasons that our group, you know, has been trying to convince Representative Scott Peters, for example, who has not made up his mind on this yet.
I understand he's under intense pressure right now.
Mm-hmm. He is, yeah. But that's one of the reasons we're trying to convince him that these environmental and climate issues are really significant because, you know, he considers himself an environmentalist. And his vote really matters in this. You know, a lot of times the Democrats' vote doesn't matter in Congress because of the huge Republican majority. But this is a case because of the split on both sides where every single vote really matters. So just to go back to your question about where the congressional representatives stand, so both Representative Peters and also Representative Susan Davis have not made up their mind on this yet. And it's unclear about Representative Issa because he has been known to have some concerns and have leaked certain sections of
the intellectual property rights. He leaked some documents, some portions of the TPP on that.
Yeah.
And yet the San Diego Free Press this month is reporting that he's now planning to vote for it. They don't cite their source on that. I guess I would say if you are in any of these districts and you have a concern, it certainly doesn't hurt to drop your congressman or congresswoman a line, call their office, let them know that you feel strongly and why, because votes are changing all over the place. Some of them that were against this a couple of years ago flip-flopped on it and vice versa. So
yeah,
it's one of those things where it's a good idea to speak out, you know, whatever your stance is and whoever your representative is.
Yeah, absolutely. This is something facing Congress right now. Our sources say that this vote could come to the floor any day now, basically just depending on when the leadership in the House feels like it has the votes.
Okay.
So, you know, it may come tomorrow, but also, you know, right now it's looking like they don't have the votes, so it could be put off indefinitely.
If people want to get more information about this issue or about San Diego 350, your organization, where can they go?
So our website is sandiego350.org, and we have some information there about the Trans-Pacific Partnership and also the other work we do on climate change in San Diego County.
Very good. And you are a nonprofit 501c3. Masada, do you have any final words on this for our listeners today?
Yeah, I'd just say, you know, climate change is a huge problem. It's an urgent problem. Scientists have told us that if we want to keep our climate similar to what it's been for hundreds of thousands of years, that we need to leave 80% of known fossil fuel reserves in the ground. And these type of agreements really make it much harder to achieve that. We need these dramatic changes. And if you have the corporations at the table whose interests are to exploit these resources instead of moving to clean energy, then it's a huge problem. And we'd like our representatives to hear that and vote no on Fast Track.
Thank you so much for joining us today on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the Network for Social Justice.
This is Leon Thompson reporting for East County Magazine. El Cajon City Council voted this week to outsource custodial services at all 22 city facilities to NMS Management Incorporated. The move is expected to save the city $350,000 to $450,000 a year. Because the city has been preparing to switch to a private contractor for custodial services for some time, no existing city employees will be laid off, according to a press release issued by the city. Instead, impacted employees have been retrained and transferred to other positions within the city that had been vacant for some time. As a result, no full-time city positions have been eliminated from the budget or will be in the near future. The contract with NMS Management is for 1 year, with an option to renew for 4 additional 1-year periods. The action was motivated by the city's goal of cutting costs and increasing efficiencies. The city council will continue to explore opportunities to streamline services provided to the public, the city press release indicates. Councilman Gary Kendrick said the money saved will be used to pay down pension debt so that we can keep our promises to the taxpayers and to our employees. My understanding is that all but 2 employees got raises of about $2 an hour and all the employees were happy, told East County Magazine, noting that those workers transferred to the landscaping department, filling vacancies there after consulting with the union.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, East County Magazine.
The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interests, not special interests. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. My very special guest today is Karen Toledo. Karen is the assistant manager with the International Student Exchange. That's the organization that helps place foreign exchange students with families here in our region and actually, I guess, across the nation.
Yes.
Karen, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Miriam.
Tell us where the exchange students come from. How many different countries are you working with?
ISE works with 25 different countries. The majority of our kids are from Germany, Brazil, but we also have Italians, Czech Republic, Danish, Finnish, Swedish, Thai, Vietnamese, Chinese, Japanese. We have many kids to choose, and they're from 15 to 18 years old.
Mm-hmm.
They attend the local high school. They will come and stay with the host family for 5 to 10 months, depending mm-hmm. on the family's want.
You are a nonprofit, a 501c. How many years yes. has the ISE been around?
Since 1982. They were founded in Northern California.
It has a very good reputation.
Yes.
Now, I know that families don't get paid any sort of monetary gain or anything for taking in a student. It's something people really sort of do for the love of the cultural exchange and the opportunities. But tell us a little bit about what is expected of the family. What are they supposed to provide? What do the students provide for themselves? And what are some of the benefits, the non-monetary benefits that families can receive?
Families provide room and board. The expense is minimal. The mm-hmm. families do, the natural parents give their child at least $300 a month for excess costs such as sporting events, social events. But you provide them food to eat and a home to live in. You can take them places, but the student would pay their own way.
Yeah, so that's kind of optional.
That's optional.
That you do.
And then ISE also provides several trips that the kids could go to if mm-hmm. the families aren't able to take them somewhere.
Now, can you be selective about this if you're really interested in having somebody from a particular part of the world where maybe you have a cultural interest or just an interest in learning more about it, or if you prefer to have a boy or a girl or a certain
yes,
age?
Yes, the families, they actually, what we do is once we receive an application in our company, we will go out and talk with the family. We find out what the family likes, what their kids enjoy doing. And then with that, I will let them choose maybe 5 students mm-hmm. and or I will show them 5 students, and then they can choose which student they want. And
nice.
It could be various countries too. Let's say they want a 15-year-old soccer player, boy mm-hmm. or girl. Then I go and I look for a 15-year-old soccer player. And then that's how I would show the student to the family.
Very, very interesting. I imagine it's a way to learn all about the culture in a different part of the world.
Yes.
It just seems like it would be fascinating.
I've hosted almost 100 kids in the last 20 years that I've been in the industry.
Mm-hmm.
And
personally
when I
hosted
personally,
at your own house?
Yes.
Wow.
I was hosting 2 at a time. So that, I'm a single mom. I was hosting 2 at a time. So
how wonderful.
The costs aren't that high if mm-hmm. a single mom can do it.
Do you form long-lasting friendships? Have you ever traveled or visited any of
yes,
the kids you hosted?
Yes, I have a very good friend in Germany. I have good friends in Brazil. I have good friends in Denmark, Spain. I've traveled to many of their homes, and I've stayed with them. And they actually get insulted if I don't stay with them. This summer, I'm going to a wedding of a student that I hosted in 2006. He wants me to come. And so he made sure that I was going to be there.
What a wonderful opportunity. Having mm-hmm. just traveled internationally,
yeah.
I know how expensive that can be for, you know, lodging and tours. Mm-hmm. Of course, you'd have someone local right there
yes,
who can tell you all about what to see and do.
They actually want you to stay with them. They have it all set up for you, and they treat you so well when you come because they are so thankful that you actually took care of their kids, and their kids had an amazing year.
Marvelous. Now, how difficult is it to place these kids in homes? Do you have enough homes for them right now, or are you
no,
looking?
No, actually, we place 2,800 kids throughout the United States. In California alone, we only place 100 students.
Wow.
The ratio is very low here in California. And there are amazing families here in California that can host our students and enjoy the students. You know, it's the unknown. Everybody's afraid of the unknown.
And everybody's working 3 jobs in
yeah.
California.
And you treat these kids like they're your child.
Yeah.
It's an amazing experience.
Now, I understand that you have an opportunity right now for an area representative to help place the kids. If
yes.
someone out there is looking for some work, what does that entail?
This is supplemental income. They assist me in locating host families and getting the word out to our local families.
Mm-hmm.
It is commission-based. But if you do place so many students, you do get a trip at the end of our placing season.
Oh,
so
my. Where do you get to go?
We're going to Dublin, Ireland this year.
Oh, my.
So you place 7 kids, you get to go to Dublin, Ireland.
I want to do that. How fun.
So it's a great opportunity, hosting, being an area rep. It's a passion that I have, and I've had for many, many years.
I can see. You just love what you're doing. Now, what about students out there, high school students, who may want to become an exchange student with a family in another part of the world? Do you help place them?
Yes, we do. We work with 5 different countries, to say, name a few: Spain, Germany, France, Switzerland. And then we also can do an independent study if a student wants to go to a country we don't sponsor, mm-hmm. but we have reps out there that can take care of them. And they do the same thing that we're doing here, but over there.
Very nice.
They make sure the students are fine and the house is good. What I always tell our families, if you're not sure you want to send your kid to a stranger, mm-hmm. host a student where your child wants to go, and then send your student to the student you just hosted family. So you're actually doing an inner exchange.
Yeah, that's a very good
idea.
And
that way you feel safe with your child in a family you already know.
Yeah, I know when I was in high school, I knew mm-hmm. people who were exchange students. I know people who hosted exchange students, and they all had just nothing but positive things yeah. to say about what a marvelous experience it was overall. So if people want to find out more about the International Student Exchange, or the ISC, if they're interested in being a host family, being an exchange student, or perhaps looking into that area rep opportunity, mm-hmm. how do they reach you, Karen?
They can reach me on my 800 number, which is 844-723-7403, or they can go to our website at iseusa.org.
Very good. Thank you very much for joining us here today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice.
Thank you. You have a wonderful day.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Rebecca Williamson.
And Leon Thompson, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week. This week's Destination East County includes a craft beer and wine festival, Shakespeare, night fishing, poetry by the river, and a taste of La Mesa.
Plus, we'll also have a preview of coming attractions, including Julian's Backcountry Dance and Barbecue, Boars and Brews at Lakeside River Park, and much more.
So stay tuned for all of these events and much, much more.
Cheers! A craft beer and wine summer festival to benefit the La Mesa Historical Society will be held on Saturday, June 6th from 1 to 6 p.m. at Date Avenue at the La Mesa Farmers Market parking lot. The festivities include unlimited tastes from 20 breweries, plus a VIP lounge, live music, food trucks, and over 30 vendors. For tickets, visit craftbeerandwinefestival.com.
Santee Lakes invites you to drop your line for night fishing. Lakes 1, 2, 3, and 4 will be open for the night fishing several times this spring and summer, starting on June 4th and June 18th this month. From 5 p.m. to 11:30 p.m., bring a lantern, but no radios, please, to keep the lake quiet for best fishing. For more information, visit SanteeLakes.com.
Upstart Theater Company presents its inaugural production, William Shakespeare's Twelfth Night, hosted by the Valhalla Theater Arts Department on June 4th and 5th at 7 p.m. in the Valhalla High School Theater, El Cajon. Upstart, founded in 2015, is comprised of and run entirely by students from schools throughout the Grossmont High School District, dedicated to keeping classical works of theater alive on the modern educational stage. This rollicking comedy takes us on a hysterical romp through 1930s Illyria, featuring mistaken identity and found love. For tickets, visit ValhallaTheater.com.
San Diego's Mission Trails Regional Park announces Poetry from the River on June 6th with poet Jim Moreno. The event includes a guided walking tour, poetry workshop, and star party open to those 12 and older. Poetry on the River will be held at the Kumeyaay Lakes Campground. For more information, visit the calendar at eastcountymagazine.org.
Attention bargain hunters, the rural community of Guate will hold its third annual community yard sale on Saturday, June 6th, starting at 7 a.m. The sale will be held at 26835 Old Highway 80 in Guate, located 1 mile west of Hilltop Supply.
La Mesa firefighters will be flipping flapjacks for charities at the annual Pancake Breakfast. The event, which is stacked up to be a fun time for the whole family, will be held on Sunday, June 7th from 8 a.m. to noon at the La Mesa Fire Station at 8034 Allison Avenue in La Mesa. Tickets can be purchased at the door. Breakfast includes pancakes, eggs, sausage, orange juice, and coffee. Proceeds will benefit the La Mesa Firefighters Local's charitable contributions.
The La Mesa Chamber of Commerce invites you to eat your heart out at the 7th Annual Taste of La Mesa, featuring tastings from 29 local restaurants. This year's delicious event will be held on Monday, June 8th from 6 until 8 p.m. at the La Mesa Community Center. For tickets and details, visit lamesachamber.com.
Now for a preview of coming attractions.
Julian's Sons of the American Legion invites you to the annual Julian Dance and Backcountry Barbecue on Saturday, June 13th from 2 p.m. to 10 p.m. The event will be held at Mangini Winery, 1150 Julian Orchard Drive, and will feature three live bands, Shotgun Wedding, Freight Shakers, and Bastard Sons of Johnny Cash. Food, beer, and wine and soft drinks will be on sale separately. For tickets, visit juliandance.org.
Lakeside's River Park first ever Boars and Brew event is scheduled for Saturday, June 20th on the summer solstice. You're invited for a beer stroll along the section of the San Diego River Trail that the conservatory manages for an evening full of beer tasting and food. The event will begin at 4 p.m. and last until 8 p.m. or until the Boars and Brew run out. To purchase tickets or a designated driver, you can visit boarsandbrew.weebly.com.
That's all for this week. You can find details on all these events and more on our calendars and our events sections online at eastcountymagazine.org.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County.
The Alpine Library Friends Association has announced an anonymous challenge grant pledge of $10,000. Donations of $250 or more from any individual or group will be matched up to $10,000 to fund getting furniture, fixtures, and equipment for the brand new county library now under construction in Alpine. The challenge grant period runs from June 1st to July 15th. San Diego County provided $10.7 million for the construction of the library, but the Alpine community must raise $675,000 for the furniture, fixtures, and equipment to go inside. So far, over half of that has been raised. To make a donation to the nonprofit Alpine Library Friends Association or to view video, photos, and additional information about the new library, you can visit alpinelibraryfriends.org or stop by the existing Alpine Library or the Alpine Library Friends bookstore. This has been a public service announcement for the Alpine Library Friends Association.
This summer, grab a book and help a parrot. This was the kickoff for the County Library Summer Reading Challenge. From now through August, kids of all ages are encouraged to read and help raise money for the Parrot Education and Adoption Center. For every child or adult who reads for 20 hours or 20 books, $5 will be donated to the Parrot Rescue Group.
Reading over the summer is very important for kids. Studies show that kids who read at least 5 books over the summer do not experience any reading loss from the previous school year.
Our organization is Parrot Education and Adoption Center, PEACE. We adopt out birds, we rescue, and we focus on education. We just want to thank San Diego Libraries and also the Department of Animal Services for giving us this great opportunity.
Sign up and keep a reading log on the County Library's website. In the County News Center, I'm Michael Russo.
East County Magazine's Ask an Author columnist, Sarkajone Miller, will be speaking at the Alpine Library this Saturday, June 6th at 1 p.m. You're invited to join her as she discusses her experiences as a publicist and a journalist. This is a recommended event for anyone interested in publishing and or writing. Refreshments will also be served, courtesy of the Alpine Library Friends Association. The Alpine Library is located at 2130 Arnold Way in Alpine.
This is East County Magazine's Tribal Beat, bringing you news for and about our region's Native American communities. Pope Francis, on a flight to Rome, declared to reporters, "In September, God willing, I will canonize Junipero Serra in the United States." In other words, the Pope intends to make Junipero Serra a Roman Catholic saint. When Father Junipero Serra, with a battalion of Spanish soldiers, built a mission near Kumeyaay Bay in 1769, there were around 300,000 indigenous people living in California. Serra was the founder of 9 Roman Catholic missions from San Diego's Mission de Alcala to San Francisco. Serra's accomplishment is hailed as the origin story for California, filled with grand deeds. It is said that Serra performed a miracle by curing a nun in St. Louis of lupus. While beatification requires a miracle, the next step, canonization or sainthood, requires a second miracle. But Pope Francis, a fellow Jesuit, made an exception, calling Serra a holy man and a great evangelizer. Serra baptized nearly 6,000 Indians. It was for Serra's great evangelizing that Pope Francis points to as qualifying him as a saint. However, Junipero Serra is no saint to indigenous people. He viewed the indigenous tribes as heathens who desperately needed the gospel, but the indigenous people of California paid a high price for their conversion. The missions were built with Indian slave labor. Their ancient food supplies dwindled. Smallpox, measles, plagues, and other diseases spiked as they came together in these tight concentrations and their numbers plummeted. According to author and historian Robert Jackson, given a native population collapse in the Spanish Catholic missions of Alta California, any Indian person consigned to or born in a mission had been pretty much given a death sentence. The massive destruction of the original nations and peoples of California is the reason why there ought to be a mourning rather than a celebration associated with the ship San Salvador and the Spanish Catholic mission system. Stephen Newcomb, co-founder of the Indigenous Law Institute, wrote, "Pope Francis and the Vatican are going to celebrate the deadly and unsaintly Spanish Catholic mission system by bestowing sainthood on Junipero Serra. What does that say about a religion and a society when it pretends that a tradition of dehumanization and brutal domination is a tradition of virtue and saintliness? The same institute that brought us the Crusades, a Borgia Pope, and the Inquisition is now going to sanctify Serra's legacy." Father Manuel Tony Diaz, the administrator of the San Gabriel Mission founded in 1771 by Serra, said his joyous reaction to the announcement of the Padre's canonization was tempered by the knowledge that some of his own parishioners look upon Serra as a reminder of a lost or frayed tribal history. At the time when Juan Cabrillo sailed into Kumeyaay Bay, the Kumeyaay Nation had a complex way of living off the land, migrating from the coast to the foothills every year to follow the food supply, cultivating and harvesting staples and weaving elaborate baskets to store and carry their goods. They manipulated the chaparral with fire to produce more food to pick and animals to hunt. Cattle ranching and sheep grazing by the Europeans led to the collapse of the traditional Kumeyaay economy, aided by a later law banning the Indians from burning the landscape. Those who converted were forced to drop their old ways and eat, dress, and act like the Europeans. Public Broadcasting produced an alarming documentary on Serra and the mission system. They had this to say. "Despite the frequent conflicts between military and religious authority for Alta California's Indians, the missions and their Franciscan administrators were part and parcel of an enormous destructive colonization process. The Spanish, largely through disease, were responsible for a population decline from about 300,000 Indians in 1769 to about 200,000 by 1821. The strenuous work regime and high population density within the missions themselves also caused high death rates among the mission Indians. By law, all baptized Indians subjected themselves completely to the authority of the Franciscans. They could be whipped, shackled, or imprisoned for disobedience and hunted down if they fled the mission grounds. Indian recruits, who were often forced to convert nearly at gunpoint, could be expected to survive mission life for only about 10 years. As one friar noted, the Indians live well free, but as soon as we reduce them to a Christian and community life, they fatten, sicken, and die. In Junipero Serra's defense, Gregory Orfalea, who wrote a biography of Serra, said, "When the Kumeyaay sacked the San Diego mission in 1775, killing 3 Spaniards, the viceroy captured about a dozen Indians and called for their execution. But Serra called for the prisoners' release and pleaded their case to the viceroy in a letter in which he wrote, 'As to the killers, let them live so that he can be saved, for that is the purpose of our coming here and its sole justification.'" In doing so, Orfalea says Serra modeled his life on the gospel of love, not a desire for land or gold. And in this way, he was different from Columbus, who enslaved and tortured Caribbean natives in his quest for precious metals. Orfalea said Pope Francis' decision was no surprise. A Jesuit who took the name after the saint and founder of the Franciscan order, Francis does not believe in Catholicism confined to the ivory tower. Serra was a kindred spirit who abandoned a high-profile academic post to take on the dangerous, austere life of a missionary. Ruben Mendoza, coordinator of California Mission Archaeology at Cal State Monterey Bay, says the canonization is long overdue. "I've always felt the canonization process was stymied through misinformation and politicalization and laying blame and onus on one individual who was actually in constant conflict with the governors and military commanders in New Spain over how they were treating the Indians." He and others said Serra fought efforts to enslave the Indians, and whippings were not limited to natives, but a common method of discipline in the Spanish Empire. Steve Newcomb concludes, "The fact remains that the Juan Cabrillo ship San Salvador was built with the spent lives of Indians and crushing Indian slave labor. The 21 Spanish Catholic missions were also built with Indian slave labor and resulted in a genocidal-level population collapse among the native nations of the geographical area known as California." Ron Andrade, executive director of the Los Angeles City and County Native American Indian Commission, compared Junipero Serra to the Spanish conquistadors who subjugated South America. Andrade, a Luiseno Indian from the La Jolla Band of Kumeyaay, said Serra decimated the Indian population. "Everywhere they put a mission, the majority of Indians are gone," Andrade said, "and Serra knew what they were doing. They were taking the land, taking the crops. He knew the soldiers were raping women, and he turned his head." Many tribes, including the Luiseno, the Juaneño, and the Gabrielino, survived the mission era through partial integration with each other and Spanish culture, but others fled inland or lost their culture completely, Andrade said. The choice of Serra for canonization is especially unfortunate given the Catholic Church has been making its first attempts at reconciliation with some of California's indigenous people who experienced devastating losses due to the colonial system Serra ushered in. On December 22, 2012, Bishop Richard Garcia of the Monterey Diocese offered the Ama Mutsin tribal band apologies from the church. He invited people to a massive reconciliation between the church and tribal members at Mission San Juan Bautista. In other former missions, tribal communities have sought reconciliation for the trauma their ancestors experienced, wounds that often remain open today. The selection of Junipero Serra as a saint seems antithetical to the current emphasis on and need for reconciliation.
This is Connie Beck with Ready, Set, Grow. I'm going to help you create healthy and beautiful gardens using less money, less hard work, and much more fun. I love mulch.
Mulch is one of my favorite words because of what it does for us. Here in Southern California, we desperately need mulch. If you've traveled abroad, you've gone to France, you've gone to England, and you've seen that back there, they use something called dust mulch. This is where they go in with a little cultivator and they rake up a little pile of loose soil on the soil surface, and they view that as mulching. And it works for them because it rains about every 30 minutes over there. But we're in Southern California, and our sun is hot, and it blazes down. First, the definition of mulch is, it's anything that you use as a barrier between the sun and the soil. And that's probably the number one wonderful aspect of mulch. It will make your plants much happier. They will grow better because they won't be going through a constant cycle of I'm wet, now I'm hot, now I'm dry, now I'm wet. So the mulch is the blanket that provides a much more serene landscape for your plants. They will be much happier without going through the constant wet, dry, wet, dry, wet, dry cycle. You will also find that it will help your water bill because the mulch will help you stretch out between waterings. When you change and start using 3 inches of mulch, yes, 3 inches of mulch on your plants, you will find that you don't need to water nearly so often. Plants that you had to water every third or fourth day may go a week very easily between waterings. That's certainly going to be helpful. But there are other things that mulch does too. I've seen those gardens in France and England because I love to travel. But when I come home, I have no interest in spending another month weeding. That's not my idea of fun at all. The mulch makes it so that I don't need to weed all the time. 3 inches of mulch means that very few weeds are going to come up. You can pull the ones that do come up very easily because they're wimpy and they have weak stems. You can do it just by bending over and jerking them out of the ground. Now, this does take a little work up front. If you have a half an acre of weeds right now, you have to get down to bare ground before you put the mulch on them. So you will need a hula hoe, and hopefully you can then rake up the stuff and make it go away because it's going to be old dry weeds full of weed seeds. If you're doing this in the early part of the year when those weeds are still green, those make great compost additions for your compost barrel. Now, once you've got the bare ground, either around your existing garden or starting from scratch, put down 3 inches of mulch. The mulch can be either organic or inorganic. I personally do not care much for putting down weed barrier underneath things. When I put down mulch, I put it on the bare ground. People who are insecure about that could put down 4 to 6 layers of newspaper, and that would be good. Whatever you do, don't put down black plastic. Don't let anybody talk you into putting plastic underneath your mulch, because the black plastic is going to tear and the edges are going to come up. Soon, within 2 or 3 years, you will have these lovely pieces of black plastic floating around your landscape. This is not something that most of us want to see. What is the mulch? You can get leftover tree prunings. You can get leaves that you've run through a shredder. You can go buy wonderful mulch at either the Sycamore or the Miramar landfill. You can use whatever you have for mulch. You can also do inorganic mulches. You can put down half-inch gravel. You can put down pea gravel. You can buy bark. There are so many choices that you can use. My favorite mulch of all time is called Gorilla Hair. Gorilla Hair is redwood that has, it's the leftovers from when they mill the redwood. And so it binds together beautifully. It's kind of a rusty color, which is why it has the name Gorilla Hair. And it lasts a long time. It's great for use on slopes. Try it. You'll like it.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the East County Wellness Center for our studio space, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technicians, Leon Thompson and Ed Barena, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, A.K. Jules, Brian Boyko, Kevin McLeod,
and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.